Hello everyone, welcome to the second season of the series of podcasts with IEEE Electron Devices Society Luminaries. As the world's largest professional organization, IEEE plays a significant role to enhance the quality of our life. Electron Devices Society, or EDS, encompasses activities involving electron devices, the main enabler for today's digital world. I'm Muhammad Mustafa Hussain, a professor of Elmore Family School of Electrical and Computer Engineering of Purdue University. I play a variety of roles in different capacities within the Electron Devices Society of IEEE. In this series of podcasts, we will be interviewing those EDS members who have made remarkable impacts in our society through their innovations and dedication. Our guest is someone who and his team have pioneered numerous breakthrough process modules for miniaturization of integrated circuits. We are speaking with fellow of IEEE and winner of highly distinctive awards in Europe, Dr. Simon Dilionivas. Simon Dilionivas retired from CA Leti on January 1st, 2016, as chief scientist after 30 years of research on micro-nanoelectronic devices and architectures. Before joining CA Leti, he was with Thomson Semiconductors from 1981 to 1986, where he developed and transferred to production advanced microelectronics devices and products. He gained his PhD in applied physics from Paris University, 1982. He is a visiting professor at Tokyo University of Technology, Tokyo, Japan, since 2014, National Chiao Tung University, Hsinchu, Taiwan, since 2015, and at Chinese Academy of Science, Beijing, People's Republic of China, since 2016. He is Distinguished CA Research Director, 2002, IEEE Distinguished Lecturer 2004, Fellow of the IEEE 2006, Fellow of the Electrochemical Society 2015. He was awarded the titles of Chevalier d'Ordre National du Mérite 2004 and Chevalier d'Ordre des Femmes Academiques 2011, the 2005 Grand Prix d'Académiques des Technologies. He is member of the ITRS since 1998, the European Research Council Panel 2007, and the Nanosciences Foundation Board of Trustees 2007. He was Associate Editor of IEEE Transactions on Electron Devices from 2008 to 2014, and member of the IEEE Electron Devices Society Board of Governors from January 2009 until December 2014, and re-elected from 2016 to 2018. He was also chair of IEEE EDS Region 8 from 2015 to 2016, secretary of IEEE Electron Devices Society from 2016 to 2017. How are you doing today?
I'm pretty fine. I'm just recovering from a small sports accident, but it's okay. It's rather an optimistic message, by the way, because I can still practice sport at my age. So I'm quite happy. Yeah. And here the weather is splendid. So I'm living in a very nice area in the mountains. Well, the environment is just great. And so basically, and very shortly, I'm happy.
Very good. So thanks for joining us. And because you started with the sports, I will actually, you know, that when we grow up, at that point, we become fans of sports. So let's actually start from the very beginning. My question is, please share with us, how was your childhood, your school life, mostly elementary, as well as like, you know, the high school, you know, if like what really, you know, that you cherish as of today, and some of the things that you actually think that, you know, maybe I should not have done it. Yeah, please go ahead.
It's difficult to say that because it was done. So you cannot remanage the past as you want. Well, basically, my childhood was very a very happy childhood. That was, I would say, in a certain way, I was happy and sometimes unhappy. But basically, I was really really happy to enjoy traveling so much. Actually, I was born in Italy, so I spoke Italian. Then we moved to France after 7 years, and then we went to Canada. So my father was a sailor, so he was used to move, and it was not really a problem for him to go from one country to another. So each time I was in a given country, I spoke and I thought in the language of the country, and I had to really assimilate the culture, and it was at the bare, each time I changed, it was a difficult exercise to to get immersed in the new environment. But still, I was lucky to be able to speak three different languages, and have met three different cultures in at the age of 10. And also I spoke a dialect, which was my mother tongue, by the way. So I was very good at school. I kept on being very good, even though I changed my language. And I was top and ranked in primary school. Then, then I went to high school. When we came back to France, by the way, yes, we came back to France. And then I stayed in France from 1967 until now, still in France, still living in France. So I went to high school. There are my results. School results were still very good, especially at math, history, geography. Language was a bit more a problem for me, even though I spoke different languages. I had some spelling problems each time I changed. So that was a sort of hurdle I had to meet each time. But anyway, globally, it was still good. Sports also, I was very good at that. And then I wanted to be a surgeon, actually. When I was 13 years old, I was fascinated by the doctors. I could see either the ones I just had to interact with, or the ones I saw on TV, some very famous surgeons like Dr. Barnard in South Africa that made the first heart transplant. Yeah, I was really fascinated by that. But then I changed my mind, like many adolescents do, by the way. And that's, I would say now, when I look back, it's it's pretty normal. It's really something which all human beings go through. Sometimes they ask themselves questions about the really real desire, really will, real will. And so I changed my mind and I decided I would become a physicist or mathematicians. I still didn't know because I was very good at maths. My results in physics, well, physical sciences were very good, but a little bit less. But still, further on, I became a physicist, not a mathematician. Then I went to the university, and at the same time, as I was a very independent spirit, I decided to take a job and work at the same time as I studied. It was quite hard, but I enjoyed it. It was not it was not really painful, but I really enjoyed to have to see both both kind of worlds and be somewhat immersed in reality, in the reality world, while academic studies were more to me some sort of exercise, mental exercise. I like to go into, and then sometime I had to certainly take a job which allowed me to, I did different kinds of jobs without going into details. At a certain time, I had the opportunity to join a high school where the director proposed me to have to teach. I was professor, junior high school professor. I had already the diplomas that were requested to do that, which was the bachelor plus 1 year. And then that allowed me to be in a more, let's say, relaxed shape, relaxed situation to continue my studies in a master degree and then PhD. So I was very much interested in the physics of semiconductors, and I did my PhD, well, master's plus PhD on energy physics. And more specifically, I was fascinated by semiconductors. I chose to work on photovoltaics, and the title of my thesis was on Schottky diodes for the characterization of photovoltaic amorphous silicon. Well, more specifically, hydrogenated amorphous silicon. After that, well, after I got my PhD, even though I would say a little bit before I defended my PhD, I joined the industry to work on still on semiconductors, but different from my PhD. From my PhD studies. So I joined the integrated circuit industry. I was lucky to have a position to develop a new technology and then transfer it to production. That was really a great, great, great experience because I faced so many issues on technology and also on the, let's say, on the characterization of the devices, And then well, there are many problems that were posed at that time, especially in the interconnect field. And then, well, I would say facing a real big issue regarding a very high dense, well, at that time, high density was not what it is now, but with the technical means we had, there were some difficulties to refill contacts with aluminum, which was the metal for interconnect at that time on the given technology. Well, I'm speaking of 2 micron to 1.2 micron and then 1 micron. Well, I developed several generations of integrated circuits. So that this issue of contact refill, because we had a very high aspect ratio for contacts. So the ratio between the height of the step and the size of the contact, and so we had to refill with aluminum. And we had the idea, myself and my boss, because we went into a very nice and very much strict and let's say fruitful collaboration. So we invented, we had the idea to refill the contact with a metallic material. And then we could interconnect much more easily our devices. So that was basically the invention of the contact plug. Well, I was not conscious at that time that this would be generalized and adopted by the whole industry. So if you can take any integrated circuit today, it's using that principle, not only for the contacts, but also for the copper damascene interconnect system. So it's basically you have to dig a hollow. It could be a circular or it could be rectangular, and then you refill with a conformal deposition. So at the same time, I was very, very busy developing new circuits, well, high-speed microprocessors, and also video processors. I was very lucky to join very important programs. Well, a national, French national, and then international programs. Well, on the French friend, on the French side, it was the program of Minitel was starting. Though, you know, Minitel was a terminal which was connected to a mainframe computer or mainframe station that every consumer had at home. Well, the terminal was in every house or in every office. Well, the whole France was covered with these terminals. It was a sort of ancestor of internet. We were not talking in 1984, we're not talking about internet, probably thinking of it, but there was no infrastructure for that yet. It became much later. Well, the next decade, actually. So, and this video processor was really a sort of benchmark for the technology I was developing. And it was a great experience because I had to learn about developing a product and also developing the technology at the same time. It's not, that's, by the way, it's not very easy, especially when you develop these kind of products. It's not, if you have to find defects in any type of defect, whether it's a sort of conception driven, or from a design problem, or a test problem, or a technology problem. Sometimes it's very difficult to understand where the problem comes from. So that was the Minitel was very, very, very important to me as an experience. And at the same time, we developed with the same kind of technology, well, modified. We developed the high-speed microprocessors for the first Macintosh. So I was happy to compete with other circuit providers like Motorola and Hitachi. And so basically we had each provider had 1/3 of the market. And the first Apple Macintosh was very, very popular. And that was also a great experience because we're talking about high volume production. And it's very satisfying to see that when you start, you know, to develop a new technology from scratch, and then you follow all the developments. Well, first the research, first devices, make your first device. Well, you have to change your process, and sometimes you using new materials. And we introduced at that time the first polyside gates. It was only the gate, not the source and drain, but the polyside gate into our circuits. And that was really a great, it was a breakthrough, by the way, because it was a good way, and it was necessary to reduce the access time to an SRAM through the word line, the SRAM. And so we could beat the record access times. We had on our 68,000 microprocessor, it was homemade version with that we modified for 2 micron and then 1.2 micron technology. So this 68,000 microprocessor was the fastest on the market. So, and even Motorola was jealous because initially they they did the first designs. And but we had some collaborations with Motorola, and then and the first versions, which was the former generation of technology, and then we we developed another version, but on our own, so was modified just to make it faster and introduce new options. New micro programs in the microprocessor. So, well, I stayed there in the industry for 5 years. So after my PhD, I developed about, I would say we developed, because it's, of course it's a collective effort. We developed about 15 different products for a high volume, some analog, mixed signal, analog digital processors for interfaces, many kind of interfaces, also analog to digital and DA, also converters for video applications, for all kind of, so many applications. I'm not going to detail because we would stay hours to explain everything. Then I will talk about my experience in Leti, but I think I went further than your first, than the initial question, I think, right?
Well, I think like, you know, that I would like to actually thank you because to bring your memories alive again at such a great length. And here are some of my perspectives. Like, you know, that you grew up, you embodied diversity, right? Like, you know, that because of your father as a sailor, he had to move around. And you also actually had to move around. And at that point, you embraced different cultures that, opened up your minds. And you accepted the fact that growing up is an evolutionary process. Our thought process changes. We have to keep our minds open. And you also took many bold decisions because, like, you know, that this is actually going to stick with many of our audiences who really would like to understand, like, you know, the how does it when they need to start working, they feel the urge to work and while they are completing their study. So you actually went through that and you also discussed about, like, you know, the different aspects, specifically, like, you know, bringing a product into the market and taking it to millions of users, that mm-hmm. every single detail has to be perfected. And it's an ongoing perfection process. It's never ending job. And so from that perspective of obviously you already actually took us through the, like, you know, the, which could have been the response to my next set of questions, like, you know, which many of our audiences, they're familiar with, like, you know, the, how was your college life or PhD or, like, you know, how was your first job? But I think, like, you know, I'm going to ask you a very important question now. This is essentially because when you were talking about the different products and the different works that you have done, it was, although I do know that we do not share videos with our audience, but I'm clearly seeing it that, like, you know, that it was coming out from your whole gesture that you, how much, how deeply you are passionate about that. So my question from that perspective is, what really made you interested about electron devices?
Oh, as I said, I was fascinated by the world of semiconductors and all you could do with semiconductors was, and is actually at that time, we didn't realize all the possibilities that we thought of. For example, if you take the world of integrated circuits, that's obvious. Then the world of displays, which was really challenging as well. As I worked on photovoltaics, there were some connections with the display world also, because we were worried about large surfaces making working devices on large surfaces. So today, when you look at a screen on your PC or your telephone, it seems something which is very common. At that time, it was really tough. Nobody would have imagined to make the displays we can make today. And it was really, well, a dream. Many dreams, actually. Also, the other thing is the what we've been capable to do. And I think in the future, this will expand, is to mix different kind of technologies on a device. For example, if I continue to talk about the screens. Now we have, you can touch your screen and do something. Generate so many complex functions, not only one, but so many. You can, let's say, just scroll a program, a whole computer program, very complex computer programs that at that time was really, as I said, something which was which we could not imagine to be possible in a such a large, such a wide volume widely spread on in the whole world, accessible to so many people, so billions of people. So I don't know if I answered your question, but I think that was really something we were discovering. And to me, you know, I was so curious. I wanted to know about all these devices, all we could do, and how we could apply electrical signals, send photons or magnetic fields on the device, and have some output which could be exploited to do any function that would be useful. So as you can see now, well, the semiconductors have been so pervasive, and we have semiconductors all around us, and they're also capable of being connected. Well, the very simple example is our phone, which could connect us day and night at any moment. So it could be a burden, but but at the same time, it's a great opportunity to explore the world, to interact with so many people as we do now today. So that was basically what motivated me, and I was convinced that, as we say in French, the nerve of the war. Well, the very important thing was that the real core of the success was to master the technology. It was very important, very, very important, and also applications as well, but mastering the technology is extremely important, is strategic. A lot of people are realizing now that this has to be shared all around the world. It's very important. Well, was not very brief, but
I think, like, you know, as you mentioned, you have always been curious to accept challenges, because you see, light at the end of the tunnel. And so that's why you have navigated through the different tunnels. And as you have mentioned, that working from microcontroller to interconnect to photovoltaic to connected devices, as well as display technology. If we go back, then we can actually see that clearly these are rooted in the fundamentals. Knowing the diodes are going to help us to actually work on photovoltaic. Knowing the the planar transistors are going to help us, to work on the thin film based transistors for display technology. Knowing the capacitors will help us to actually work with the capacitive based the touch screen, the sensing mm-hmm. technology. All these things are rooted in the fundamentals. So you have been adventurous, let's put it this way, and you realize that as you started working through this maze, that solving one problem, then it actually opens up another one. But at the same time, the impact is exponential expansion of the electronic technology for the welfare of human being. And I think, like, you know, that's a huge booster, inspirational booster for someone to actually navigate through all these different aspects of the electronics technology. So that actually will lead me to my next question. And this somehow is like, you know, that has been a little bit like, you know, the I would put it a matter of a debate. You know, some actually think that they had some eureka moment. Some actually think that, you know, their eureka moment came as it went, right? Like on the end as it goes. So, you know, that you have worked on a variety, a broad variety of different kind of technologies, right? So did you ever feel that you had certain eureka moment that, oh, you know, that actually, like, you know, that you still remember fondly?
Oh, you mean the best?
Yeah, kind of.
Which
like
were
that.
The best moments or the weakest
yeah.
ones?
No, okay. I think the best moments. Let's talk about that.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Ooh, so many.
Yeah. Let's pick one, right? Like, you know, that because
actually,
that will actually.
It's, yeah. Even though sometimes you have weak moments, if we should define what that means, by the way.
You have the liberty. To define.
What is important is do not regret. Try to make it, even if you think you have not been successful or you have failed in doing something, just be, try to see the positive aspects out of that, unfortunate event or fail. So there were so many technologies I explored after I left the industry. You know, I wanted to still continue the adventure of going further into the scaling of the technology, because I understood that integrated circuits allowed to scale the devices and make even more complex things. And so I decided to join a research at LETI. And well, I retired from LETI 6 years ago. And so I stayed there more than 30 years. Well, there were so many topics with high risky research, especially in technological research, risks can be very high and can cost you a lot of money if you fail. But still you have to keep your mind as strong as possible and say, okay, this was a pain or a hurdle. I was wrong. So sometimes, you know, I've been wrong. So not only successes. Then you have to say, okay, what can I learn from that fail, from that decision I've taken, or wrong way. That's very important. You can learn a lot of things, especially at a certain time. I was working on sealed interface local oxidation of silicon. So there was isolation. I would say it's an ultimate isolation. And we made a process work. Basically, the problem of the locus isolation is that you have a bird's beak. So you lose space. So whenever you want to scale that, it means when you want to step from one generation to another, it means that you have to scale down the bird's beak as well, reduce the bird's beak as much as possible. So to make it short, the let's say the best way is to, the most straightforward way is to increase the stress on the mask, on the oxidation mask, and then the problem is that you have to find new conditions for the field oxidation, because you introduce so much stress that you can introduce so many defects, and then where your dyes are going to leak, your oxide, gate oxide can also be very leaky or defective. And so you have to seal the interface between the mask and the silicon. And we use a sort of rapid thermal nitridation, which introduced a pure nitride on silicon. And then we could relax the stress on the mask, just make sure that nothing was oxidized during the field oxidation. I hope this is clear, because it's not very obvious to explain like this. You need a picture a sketch to explain really. Anyway, we succeeded in making a working technology, but at the same time, other people were developing, and we were developing. I was developing several technologies. You know, I believe that we could keep low-cost isolation go further and further and reach technologies like 0.1 micron, which we demonstrated, by the way. And then at the same time, we were developing shallow trench isolation, which seems much more easy to integrate with some difficulties to planarize. So CMP was a key just to planarize. Many people tried so many solutions like resist and etch back, and that was for manufacturing. It was not very easy to integrate. So the silo isolation was competing. We also reached zero bird speak with no defects. And we proved it. But anyway, everybody went, and we did also. We went to shallow trench isolation, finally. But we kept on developing this silo isolation, because we really believed that it was a good solution. Well, even though we did not pursue that afterwards, we learned so much about the interface between silicon and silicon nitride or nitride oxide, which we managed to make without any defects. You know, we quit that technology, but we learned about introducing nitride oxides in the transistor just to introduce a P+ gate MOSFET. So, P+ gate by implant, then thin dielectric, thin gate oxide, which had to be nitrided to make to have a barrier to the diffusion of boron inside the substrate. So inside the channel. Yeah. So so this is an example of something that failed, but still we learned so much. It was not really completely negative. We could do something else. You know, how do you say? I'm trying to find a good word for that. Resilience. That's very important. Be resilient. So try to go one step further by learning by your failures and your successes, of course. Then we developed so many kind of other technologies with keeping in mind that we wanted to look into the ultimate CMOS. because we were feeling that scaling more and more the CMOS technology would meet some hurdles, especially scaling the SiO2 as a gate oxide. The P plus N plus gate would have an end. And so there are so many other process modules that we had to modify to keep on scaling CMOS technology. That, given that those considerations, we decided to start a ultimate CMOS project. So we made the first 20 nanometer device transistors. That was a record in 1999. We were so happy. So I'm talking about a success, I would say, because for the first time, was not a US or a Japan lab. So I have so many friends in the US. I'm sorry, guys. And Japan, I know. we can smile about that because we have been collaborating also, even though we were competing well. It was a nice competition, I would say. But at the same time, so many friendly collaborations. We were so happy to have in Europe for the first time a lab that was really, producing such an advanced device. It was not perfect. Well, I was very much criticized, but I didn't care about that because I said, the message is that we could make it. That was very important. And many people doubted. They said, 20 nanometer, don't think about it. We'll never make it. It will be the end before that for many reasons, economical reasons, physical reasons. Well, there was a very big, messy discussion going on, and people didn't really think, really know actually what everybody was talking about. And anyway, it was very nice to live there. And then we thought of introducing high K, and realized that high K without a metal gate, forget it, you wouldn't be able to make it. And then we thought about the Damascene metal gate. Well, we patented it in 1996, and then it was completely self-aligned. There were some ideas going around with some T-shaped gate, but we thought that we needed really to have a cold end process, and also associate the metal gate with the high K. So we straightforwardly went into the choice of hafnium oxide because it was the most compatible with silicon, definitely. And there was other options around, but we looked at them, but quickly decided. We made some tests, but quickly decided to keep on hafnium oxide. And actually, we were the first ones to present at the 2002 IEDM, the first transistors. Well, they were experimental, but it looked really good with the Damascene gate, hafnium oxide, then a metal refilling the groove was a replacement gate process. So So many years later, Intel claimed that they did it, but I, from time to time, I remind that we were the first ones to show it. Even though at that time, also, so this is a message I would like to deliver to all the young people. If you are criticized, and many people say so many negative things about what you did, and you are sure that you did a good job, you shared that with your colleagues, let's say also other scientists around the world, please don't be discouraged. Continue your work, because try to be in connections with in connection with your colleagues, and accept their criticism and give back some arguments, but do not be discouraged. I think it's very important. We were very much criticized about this Damascene metal gate because it was more complex than a, let's say, a usual a classical and state of the art at that time process. But still, it seemed to us it was the best way to have dual gates with dual gate stacks for channel and P channel. More expensive, of course, but with volume, you can make things work and be less expensive. And in my team, I enjoyed having around me so many people, so many good people. So we envisaged to explore even further the technology. We explored stacked nanowires because we believed that nanowire was the ultimate architecture with gate all around structure. We were the first ones to publish stacked nanowires. I need to recall this because I see also many papers from Intel, from other people saying that, look at this, this is new. Well, we published that 2006, IEDM 2006. So, and then we looked at into single electron devices because the reasoning was, we scale down our devices, but we use less and less electrons to switch a MOSFET. So we should look into few electrons to single electron processes or phenomena. And nowadays, this is exploited for a huge program. Well, the people, good people that have taken over are developing the quantum computing program in Europe by using CMOS technology. And that's extremely challenging. And it was the architecture that they're exploring was possible because at the same time, we explored the 3D integration, sequential 3D integration, which means that you stack devices in the hottest part of the process. You're trying to minimize as much as possible thermal budget. That's very challenging. And we developed a nice 3D sequential integration. We started that in 2005 with a master's student, by the way, and then continued by a PhD. And now it's coming up. And probably in the next few years, the first products will come out. First, let's say, real products will come out. Well, it takes years. You know, the incubation time for all everything I talked about, the incubation time is, let's say, about 10 years. And because the you need to develop the technology, understand, well, first have some research aspects, research activities on new materials, if you need new materials. Then you have to make the first devices, and then you probably need some new equipments. It takes time to do all that. And well, 10 years is sometimes not enough to do all that. Okay, and then I enjoyed also, as I succeeded in making so many, introducing so many technologies and devices, I enjoyed to be a chief scientist for all silicon activities in Leti and mix different kind of technologies, more and more type, like scale devices, CMOS devices, associate that with sensors, actuators, and using so many kind of physics, magnetics. So I was really in contact, enjoying the to direct the PhD program in our institute. So that concerned about more than 1,000 people, actually. And we used to have about 120 PhD students in collaboration with the university. It was very important to me to really keep the connection with academics, academia, sorry. And we had a co-direction of PhD studies. Basically, we shared the results and also the all the tuition for with the student master students or PhD students, and well they could use our equipments and at the same time enjoy the co-direction with a with a professor in the university or engineering school. Not only in Grenoble, in our area, but France, Europe, and also Japan, US. So we could, it was very exciting. And it's very important because in this, in our business, in our areas, research areas, we need to have really feedbacks from people thinking differently or envisaging the world completely differently. And it's very important to enrich our knowledge with that. We are in a sad period right now. We're talking about war. We hear about war. We see very sad things on TV or hear about conflicts. But we need to keep in mind that we need to overcome all these conflicts and think of having different ways of thinking to discuss and to also question. And that's the way science and technology could advance, could go forward. And that has always been the case in the past, and I don't see why it should not be in the future. I don't know if right. I answered your question.
No. Actually, like thank you for letting us walk in your memory lane, because you actually addressed many of the questions that I had, including and I really appreciate that you started with the classic textbook example of the bird's beak, the thin film deposition, and then how that led us to actually think about the strain engineering and that for defect mitigation, and then eventually from shallow trench isolation to the different ultra scale devices, 20 nanometer transistor devices at the, the 1998-99 time frame. And I actually remember the 2006 IEDM paper on that, the 3D stacking. So, I do integration, so I'm familiar with those kind of approaches and how they started. And so basically all this conversation that actually gives us, what do you think about the future of electronics and as you mentioned about the conflict that's going on, that's so disturbing to everyone, in a sense that this is not childish play, a war, and all these things, and they need to be overcome with the healthy competition, the collaboration that we can imagine. So from that perspective, I would like to actually take you to a little bit, lighter section of our conversation, which is very popular with our younger audience. In this round, I'm going to ask you some personal questions, and we appreciate if you can actually give answers in a rapid fire way. So, which means that maybe using one or two words. Okay. If you're ready, I'll go ahead. Okay. What are your hobbies?
My hobbies, sports. I like to make concrete also. Construction. I have a house and 500 square meters land around. And so there's always something to do. So you always have to do something in your house. So that keeps me busy. Then I'm directing also, even though I'm retired, I'm still working a little bit. I give some DLs for IEEE. And also what keeps me busy is the edition of a series with Jenny Stansford, where we have already published 4 books. And there's a fifth volume, which is in preparation. And so, by the way, if you want to write a chapter, you're welcome.
Thank you.
So I invite, basically, I do part of the job, but I mean, writing chapters, but I invite also well-known scientists to write a contribution, and it's been quite popular. I would say until now I've been successful in having almost no objection about invitations I made, and so that keeps me quite busy right now. I travel also, so that's I enjoy that with my family. I take more time traveling for pleasure now, so that's an advantage when you're retired. So,
Right. So from that perspective, what is your favorite travel spot? Pick one.
Oh boy, that's a difficult question. Wow,
that is
all the places I've been into. I find an interest, That's a tough question. I'm sorry. I can enumerate all the countries I've been to. Well, of course, U.S. In many states of the U.S. and it's a long list. Canada, South America, Central America, many countries. of course, in Asia. I've been so many times in Japan. Well, I've been to Saudi Arabia also. I've been to India, to Korea, I've been to Thailand, to Australia, to New Caledonia, to, I didn't go to New Zealand. I would like to go there. But I found, well, I'm sorry, I forgot some countries. To China, of course. I went to China so many times. Taiwan. So it's difficult to answer to your question because, as I said, I enjoyed all the people I've met. I found some positive things to tell about or to do with them. So
okay.
What so, can I do? I like very much the place where I live, by the way, because it's so beautiful. The mountains are full of snow right now, and it's springtime at the same time. So flowers are coming out of the snow and in some places. And well, it's really great.
Okay. So I'm going to ask you a more challenging question. Because you have been, you know, you have traveled so much and you have tasted different kind of food. So what specific, like, you know, so what is your favorite cuisine? Again, pick one.
Sorry to disappoint you because I'm going to give you the same answer as before.
Okay. Okay, we understand.
the only restriction I would say is that if it's too spicy, that's I find it a little bit a problem for me, but still I enjoy it. No.
Okay.
If I in some places I ask for low spice, people are kind enough to say, okay, he likes our cuisine, so we don't want to disappoint him, so we put low spice.
Okay.
I enjoy. So, you know, I when I was a kid, I grew up in Italy. So, of course, Italian cuisine was an obligation.
Very good. Then actually, that's very tasty.
We came to France. Then we went to Canada. So you can see the different countries, different kind of food. I enjoy so much. Arab cuisine, also North Africa, which is different. I found some big differences between them, couscous or other dishes, and Lebanese cuisine, Chinese, of course. Well, just try to enjoy and find what's the best for you in each cuisine, and you can really appreciate everything. That's, you know, I try to find the positive aspects in everything I do, and be conscious about the what's negative and not really good, and then pursue.
Right.
Go on.
Right.
Enjoy.
Okay. Okay. Music or movie, which one you enjoy more?
Both.
Okay. That's also good. Okay. We can take that. Okay.
Yeah, classical music.
Okay.
Jazz. I like very much jazz.
Okay.
There's a jazz festival not very far from my house here. Every year I go there. It's yearly festival. And also there's a classical music festival in Aix-en-Provence. I go there very often. Also, even though it's a bit further from my house. Movies, well, I've seen so many movies. There's a long list of films I like.
I'm not going to actually like on that.
I'm going to the movies at least. I try to find some time to go to the movies at least once or twice a week. So
very good. Okay.
Which is nice is that you can record movies or music in such big volumes on a USB key. You know, I did not talk about the work we did on non-volatile memories, because all the isolation, field isolation technologies, and also afterwards the integration we made was dealing with non-volatile memories with industrial partners. And we developed resistive RAMs afterwards, PC RAMs. And then all this work was injected in other programs, like big programs like neuromorphic computing, which is program which is now going on Atleti. And I was very happy to be at the very beginning of such a business, such a new activity in the institute. So, the people that I've taken on are now doing a very, very good job. So I'm sure that very nice things will come out. So,
right. Okay. From this session, you talked a lot about sports. So, what is sports you enjoy normally?
Oh wow! I used to run jogging.
Okay.
I ran several marathons in my life.
Okay.
And skiing.
Okay.
Skating also.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, you know, in Canada, I used to play hockey.
Okay. Ice hockey.
Basketball. Ice hockey, yes. Basketball. Soccer. Uh-huh. Well, we say football in Europe, but.
Yeah,
anyway.
Of course. Well, it means that you love
swimming,
sports.
Swimming, I do a lot of swimming also.
Okay.
And also walking in the mountains, just take a walk for, let's say, 1 hour, going up and then come down. That's replaces so many exercises. And
hiking, trekking. Okay, so the last question from this session. What is the book that you are reading now?
Oh, you know, I'm reading several books at the same time.
Okay.
My wife says, you'll never finish because you do so many things at the same time. So right now I'm reading I'm reading again a nice book I enjoyed about a brief history of time. By Stephen Hawking, and that's really a book I recommend to sign to all sciences, because unfortunately he's died now, but he took the reader from the very basics and then tries to explain very complex physical phenomena, and just trying to keep in mind to unify physics. You know, there's always been a still going on debate about unifying all the different disciplines in physics, like relativity and quantum mechanics. All the problems have not been completely understood or solved. So there's so many things still to understand. I recommend that also to technologists, you know, that, because that opens, let's say, your perspectives, your imagination, even though you can think it's far from your preoccupation. It's good to think, to come back to the basics, and because coming back to the basics allows you to think, to step back on what you're doing and say, okay, you come back to your, let's say, to your technology and say, okay, let me see, did I do this exactly as it should be done? Is this the right way? I thought it was the right way, but is this the right way to continue? It's very good also to have some debates, you know, from time to time, and try to ask questions, even though it seems negative to you. It's very good to be critical on your own work and rely on other people to criticize your own work. That's very healthy. It's very healthy for the benefit of science and technology, and let's say trying to go one step forward. It's very, very important, I think.
Right. I think, like, you know, the Brief History of Time is a widely read book. So that actually concludes this session, and I am at the last portion of our discussion. You have talked already a lot about the future of electronics, so I'm not going to bother you with that. But I
have you don't bother me.
So I'm going to actually ask you two questions, which the first question is, can you think of an application that does not exist today, but you would like to see in the future?
Oh boy.
So that's my first question.
Very risky. Well, an application, I would say a sort of holographic telephone or holographic device for everybody.
Okay. I think that's very visionary.
With a touch actuation possibilities, or even telepathic actuation. So I think it's due to the themes, all the thematics that people are studying today, that could be a reality in the future. I don't know when. But yeah. I didn't really think about a plan about this application. But this is something which is going to come out in the future, and there are right. so many applications possible. And of course, I think we need to anticipate about regulations, you know, ethics. Because it could open, you know, a way to negative thoughts or negative type of behavior, and I think it's very important to that engineers and scientists keep this in mind, even though it's difficult, you know, to find a compromise between, let's say, limit by regulation and also fundamentally searching, researching. So it's, but in the future, we will need to be conscious about that more and more. We see with the development of internet that, well, regulation is very important, even though it was, you know, open to everybody and access. You can, it's beautiful tool, because that opens so many possibilities. But regulation is also there to guarantee your own freedom, your own, let's say, your data has to be saved and to be kept safe. by the whole community, not only yourself or one or two persons. It could be a large community. So it's very important to have these ethical thoughts, ethical aspects to be envisaged at the very beginning of technology development. So,
right. No, I think, like, you know, as you have mentioned, that responsible usage of all these beautiful tools. So my last question from the scripted one is that one piece of advice for the younger generation.
One piece of advice. Well, do what you like. That's the, I would say, if I would conclude very simply, I try to do what I liked. That's very important to keep your motivation and keep on thinking. That's very important. Don't worry about criticism. It's also, you should take criticism also as positive, not only, you know, sometimes criticism are negative, but it should be a way to think, to say, how I can improve something. How can I improve this or that? And that's, well, very simply. Very simply, I would say, do what you like and be open to any criticism. That's
right.
That's, I would say, basic principles you need to adopt.
Thank you for attending this IEEE EDS sponsored podcast. To listen to other EDS podcasts as well as benefits and resources EDS offers, please go to the website eds.ieee.org. Thank you for listening.